Let him practice. You ready and you're ready? Okay, I'll call the resources meeting to order. In attendance, we've got Representatives Olson, Gatto, co-chairs Ramerson, Samuels, Elkins, and Crawford. Today on the agenda, we have Senate Bill 102. And for discussion purposes, I take accept a motion to adopt the House CS.
Mr. Chair, I move House CS for CS for Senate Bill Number 102, Resources 24-LS049/U.
Okay, hearing no objection to that, as a working document, we have adopted the CS, and I'd like to invite Senator Stevens. Is he coming? No?
Well, I guess I'm the only one here. Doug Letts from Stevens' office is going to...
You want me to wait for a minute? We can call him at ease, and we'll call a brief at ease.
Here he goes.
You just adopted a version, a new draft, committee substitute work draft that we just saw only within the past hour. We support the version of the bill as it was reported out of the Senate, which is the /C version. And that version of the bill was amended on the Senate floor to kind of be the compromise bill that Senator Stevens originally introduced to allow a 6-month extension to the coastal districts to submit their new revised coastal management plans to the department. I will defer to what your committee has in order for the day just by stating that the senator will support the Senate version of the bill as reported out of Senate Finance, and he hasn't had a chance to look at what is contained in this new U version. So do you have any questions?
Representative Olson.
We're not looking for any action on this today, are we?
Yes, sir, we are. What I'd like to do perhaps then is take a very brief at ease. We can go through the CS, which Bailash, if you could walk us through the House CS for the CS for SB 102, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Changes. For the record, my name is Joe Bailash. I am staff to the Budget and Audit Committee. And would you like me to walk you straight through the CS or?
I think straight through the whole CS, yes.
You got it. Okay. Sections 1 through 13, which takes you through to the top part of page 11. Sections 1 through 13 are all cleanup sections that fit together with the sunset provisions in the bill. Section 14 adds the Alaska Coastal Management Program to 4466 to direct budget and audit, the Legislative Audit Division to conduct a program audit in the year before the sunset takes place in 2011. Section 15 changes the word from may to shall with regard to local coastal districts duplicating, restating, or incorporating by reference state or federal statutes.
Clarify one point, if I could, sure. Mr. Bailash. The original, it's not really a simple may to shall. It was a may not to a shall not, which is a bit of a nuance to me anyway. I mean, it's not may to shall, but the may not to a shall not. So go ahead.
Absolutely. Section 16 extends the life, if you will, of the existing local district plans against which consistency determinations are going to be rendered through the transition phase. And that runs out through March 1st, 2007. Section 17 extends by 20 months extends to March 1st, 2006, the date at which the deadline for the submission of the new local revised district plans. The intent here is to open up a gap between the date of final federal approval on the state's new standards and the submission of the local district plans. One of the complaints that was heard in previous committees was that the rules are changing. They don't know which standards they are supposed to be writing their new district, their revised district plans against. And so the idea was to open up a two-month window in order for the local districts to know what the final federally approved standards are before they have to write the final revisions to their local plans and submit them to DNR to begin the review process. Section 18 is the repeal section to affect the sunset. Section 19, Part A, indicates the provisions within existing local coastal district policies that have adopted by reference existing state or federal standards or statutes. They are automatically repealed and declared null and void. It also goes into those local district plans which address any matter regulated by DEC. Those provisions within the local plans are declared null and void as well. And that's a little bit of a hybrid approach with what was done in House Bill 191. In House Bill 191, there was what was termed the DEC carve-out. Anything that DEC does is deemed to be consistent because it's already complying with the Federal Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act. The Part B is putting a time limit on DNR's completion of a review of the ABC list. Those are items which appear in the regs in different lists for what are categorically consistent type of items, permits and whatnot, and then the generally consistent items. Anything that then appears, those are the A and the B list. Anything on the C list has to go through a consistency review process from square one. And it sets out a list of things that that review must include. Section 20, emergency regs, the agency had indicated in Senate Finance that they would like for the bill to contain a declaration so that they may adopt their emergency regs. And then Section 21 is the date at which the existing state standards expire. That presupposes that the new standards from 191 are approved by OCRM by December 31st. The old standards then would expire on January 1st and the new standards take over. And then Section 22 is the effective date for the repeal section. The repeal section is keyed to the year 2011. And let's see here. July 1st, 2011, the rationale for that provision was that we're going through this transition phase, getting the new program that was adopted through and developed through House Bill 191, which passed 2 years ago. We're going to be transitioning until the first quarter of 2007, and before we get the full implementation of the revised coastal zone management program here in Alaska through the door, on the ground, mixing metaphors, and up and running. It'll run for 4 years before sunsetting, and at that point there will have been an audit conducted in that last year. The legislature will then have the opportunity to reauthorize the program, much like they do at the federal level. The federal agencies involved audit the program every 3-4 years or so, maybe 5. And so it's just an idea that the state ought to do the same. And however, there's looks like the difference between the sunset clause in the that the Senate passed and the one before you is that if OCRM fails to approve the revised plan, the new state standards, if they fail to approve by January 1, 2006, then the program sunset takes effect March 1st, 2006. That puts us right in the middle of next session. If we come back in January, OCRM has not approved the new state standards, the legislature will have an opportunity to investigate why that is, whether or not we're able to close whatever gap is left and take whatever action might be necessary at that point.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Rammers.
Thank you. Joe, four of us on this committee, including Chair Seaton and State Affairs, heard this bill or heard a version of coastal zone management about 6 or 8 weeks ago. At that time, there was a contentious relationship between the feds and the state of Alaska. Because that issue has been resolved, can you just put this CS for Senate Bill 102 into some context just to kind of reframe how we're addressing this or approaching this differently now than we did 2 months ago in State Affairs, please?
Sure. Through the chair, just actually a few short weeks ago, there was still a fairly wide chasm between DNR and OCRM. It was reported after, I think, 2 separate meetings involving state officials meeting with federal officials in Washington, D.C. We've been narrowed down to, I think, 4 issues now, and they believe that they're going to be able to sort of clear all of those gates if they just have until the end of this year. The federal agency has indicated that they believe they can get through the EIS by mid-December and approve the state's program. My understanding is that the DNR officials have agreed with that, and that is why the governor had changed his position and is now supporting a 6-month extension. But it's a 6-month extension, and that's it.
Follow up. So then, am I to understand that now that we've resolved this federal versus states' rights issue, and this is now under the umbrella of the state of Alaska, that the governor is supportive of the CS, the bill that's before us today? Is that correct?
Well, through the chair, I don't work for the governor or speak for the governor.
you know the.
But my understanding is yes, the governor is supportive of a 6-month extension. This mechanism would make things much easier to understand if we fail to get approval from OCRM in that 6-month hurdle.
And finally, Joe, if this bill passes, who benefits?
Well, through the chair, I my assessment would be that everybody benefits because we will get through the end of this year, And when we come back to Juneau next session, we will either have federal approval of the new state standards and be able to continue on getting the local districts to revise their plans, get those plans reviewed at the state and federal levels, and operational by 2007, or at least early 2007, and hopefully be done with this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question. Now, you're giving us assurance that the federal government will meet a timeline on an EIS and that they will work out with the state and will have agreements and ratified and approved these standards by January 1. Is that what you're telling us, that you're assured of that, or is this an estimate?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I've not been assured. The state officials have received assurances from the federal agencies that the EIS can be completed by that time. Completing the EIS isn't the issue. Getting them started on it is, from what I understand, the big problem we've been faced with and why we're in this, forgive the phrase, lockbox. We have to extend the dates here in order to get through the EIS and get the federal approval of our new program. And so by putting a date certain on when the federal agency has to complete the EIS and approve the standards, you back up the back through the calendar and figure out when OCRM has to get the process started. And the assurances given to DNR officials indicate that can happen and it should happen.
Yes.
Yeah. And I presume we're going to have some DNR officials that will be here to testify directly on that. I guess my problem is that I've been involved in a number of EISs, as well as a number of other people in here have been, and environmental impact statements can get held up in many parts of the process. And just because you started on one point in time doesn't assure that you can get through and pass and verify and approve regulations of another government. And so I guess I have some problems with that January 1 date, because the problem is that we will not be in session, and so that the legislature would be totally taken out of the loop, and we would just put it to the administration. So I'm just wanting to notify everybody that I will be making a motion later to change that January 1st date to March 1st, which would give us 45 days after we come back in session next year to act if we care to act on the situation, in case we get into the problem where the state and federal government have another timeline slipped, as we've had many of them slip in this process.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Seaton. And also on page 14, though, we put the March 1st date in there where we can come back and review. But if we don't have a deadline, then no deadline will ever be followed. Mr. Balash.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to clarify with Representative Seaton. Are you speaking to the date in Section 21 on page 13?
Yes.
That's correct.
Okay.
Page 13. Line 30.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Balash before we go to public testimony? Hearing none, thank you, sir.
Don't go. I have one.
Representative Olson, I'm sorry.
Where did the draft come from? The sponsor's office said they hadn't seen it. It has our name on it, I guess.
I've been working on the draft, and Mr. Webb could have come up and done this, but Mr. Balash is far more familiar with all of the subject material one way or another.
Have we had any impact from the impacted entities? We had public testimony last time. We had it from three of the boroughs. Yeah. I know my borough hasn't seen this yet.
Where
I have some concerns over the speed that we're moving. I know we're running out of days, but
We are about to hear public testimony from 20 people. So noted, though. So noted. Are there any other questions?
We've got 4 days left, Joe.
I guess I do have another question.
Yes, Senator Seaton.
Thank you. On page 13, we have this section on emergency regulations. Doesn't DNR have the ability to do emergency regulations now, and why are we adding this new section back in here?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, my understanding is that, yes, DNR does have the authority under existing statutes to issue a finding that an emergency exists and that allows them to then issue emergency regulations. The department made the request that the section be added in Senate Finance Committee when we were developing the CS there, and that is what we did in Senate Finance.
Yes.
I guess is this then basically a legislative declaration of emergency? Is that what this actually is? Is we are declaring that there is an emergency and that they have the ability then to act on that without the agency finding an emergency?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I do believe we're going to save a piece of paper. The department would be able to speak to that more directly, but...
Okay, well, maybe when they come up, I'll ask them that question. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. We'll go to public testimony right now, starting in Kenai with Gary Williams.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Williams. I'm the Coastal Zone Coordinator for the Kenai Peninsula Borough in Soldotna. I just received a little bit ago and reviewed very quickly the committee substitute. I want to speak in favor of the language in the bill before you that provides additional time for a coastal district plan submission to DNR. And I particularly appreciate the provision that starts the clock after the OCRM and DNR have concluded their negotiations. The principal reason districts are not as far along in the rewrite process as they are, including our borough, is largely due to the uncertainty that surrounded the shape and form the district's plans should take. Now, having spoken in support of the time extension aspect of the legislation, I would like to note that while I appreciate that programs should be able to survive an audit and to do so positively, I really don't understand why there's a rush to pile abuse on the ACMP, further abuse, by including language to sunset the program. ACMP is arguably one of the best programs the state has in a role of expediting project reviews, and I think by the mere participation of the 27 coastal districts and the fact that their local governments provide matching money for their programs and some in excess of the match requirement, offers a strong vote of confidence in the efficacy of the CZM program on the local level. It seems to me that by offering sunsetting language, the legislature is suggesting that the value of local input on state and federal activities in districts is suspect. I'm bewildered to understand when and how it became about that the positive contribution of the ACMP in reflecting local input on activity that affects every Alaskan in coastal districts became a matter of such concern that the legislature seeks to place the program on probationary status. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. And the sunset language that was put in here is, I put in there, I think that the legislature should constantly review all of its programs, constantly, to look at the effectiveness and to see if any changes need to be done with that. It was certainly not meant to poke a stick at this particular program or any particular program. So with that, but thank you very much for taking the time and your comments. Marlene Campbell in Sitka.
afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Marlene Campbell, the Government Relations Director for the City and Borough of Sitka. I've been the Coastal Management Coordinator for the City and Borough for more than 18 years. Our coastal programs existed since 1981 and has been a real strong advocate for our seat at the table in management decision-making in our coastal zone. And we strongly support the continuation of the program, so I'm here to thank you for the opportunity to have a delay in the deadlines for compliance with the various revisions that have been handed to us because of House Bill 191. The Sitka actually is trying to comply with those deadlines, but obviously it will be very beneficial for the state, the feds, and all of the legal determinations in terms of the revision language to sort out exactly what will be required, especially in terms of impacts to federal lands and other things that impact our coastal program revised policies. So I really do appreciate all the effort that you're putting into this revised legislation. However, there seem to be some efforts with both Senate Bill 102 and House Bill 189 to add other clauses to the legislation rather than just simply extending the deadlines as the governor has proposed in his letter that seem to be really muddying the waters, especially at this 11th hour, and complicating the whole process of getting through our coastal plan revisions. The City and Borough of Sitka has attempted in good faith to revise our coastal program for almost the last year now. We put a great deal of effort and money into our revision and intend to meet the July 1 deadline, although if we have more time, we'll certainly use it to beef up our mapping and do a better job of complying than we could otherwise. But we're frustrated with the continuing changes in the language in these bills that, if passed, would change the requirements that we'll have to meet in our plan revisions. Then the sunset language of putting the program on a temporary review status is really objectionable when the 27 coastal districts in good faith have tried to meet all the requirements of HB 191 and are doing so at the expense of huge changes to our coastal program. In our case, more than half of our enforceable policies, 23 of them, have been deleted, and we will do what is required to make the program consistent with the legislature's requirements. But when those keep changing and we get new requirements put into the language of these bills, the program is a movable feast that we simply can't keep up with, especially when we're this far along in the program revisions. So I encourage you to think about taking out all the extraneous requirements for new regulations relating to DEC and emergency regs and sunset language, and just dealing with the deadlines that we do need to move in order to realistically get through the process. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for Marlene? Thank you very much. I'd like to go in the audience here to Mr. Bates with DNR.
Good afternoon. My name is Randy Bates, Deputy Director of the Office of Project Management and Permitting, which is within the Department of Natural Resources. Chair, did you want me to speak to anything in particular at this point?
I thought you were going to make comments.
Oh,
if not,
I hadn't.
Okay.
Respectfully, Chair.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Randy. I'm curious. What assurances, and I hope they're in writing, do we have that OCRM will approve the final regulations by January 1, 2006.
Thank you, Representative, through the chair. At this point, we don't have assurances in writing. However, the way this is structured is we have, as Mr. Baelish characterized, gotten over a significant hurdle with OCRM about a month ago. And we are moving rapidly towards what's called preliminary approval of the Coastal Management Program. What that means is that OCRM, through their review of our amended program for the last 7 or 8 months, has determined that preliminarily, in accordance with the federal rules that are out there, our amended coastal program complies with the federal law. What that allows us, when they offer preliminary approval to us, which we expect to be offered July 1st this year, what we expect, what that gives us is the ability to continue to expend federal monies, the money that we get to implement our federal grant. And this year it is in the neighborhood of, I believe, about $2.6 million for this next fiscal year. The surety that we have that they will finish NEPA within that time frame is, number one, a handshake. We worked with the leadership back at NOAA to make sure that they understood we have a very short time frame and that they have all the information they need to be able to conduct the NEPA review and issue their record of decision within that time frame. In addition, and what's more important, is that they realize, and this is federal law, preliminary approval cannot extend beyond a six-month period of time, 180 days. So we know that they will be working to make sure that Alaska has a program approved and that if they have not finished their work by January 1st of this next year, the six-month time frame, that the state loses its ability to continue to expend federal monies. They also realize that our state standards with this extension provision force the state into a position of losing the ability to conduct consistency reviews on federally permitted activities and federal activities. So with those in mind, we have been working very, very closely with OCRM to make sure that they will meet their time frames, and they have committed to do so with us.
But we don't have preliminary approval now. We don't have it in writing that we will receive it by July 1. We're anticipating that. If it would come a month later, what is our or a month earlier, mm-hmm. what would be the effect?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. We do have in writing what it's going to take to get to preliminary approval. That was received, I believe, April 14th in a letter that came back from the Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management. They detailed the final changes or the final provisions that we had to make in order to secure preliminary approval. There are just but a handful of issues that we have to accomplish. We have regulations out for review right now. Those are part of the package we need to complete. Once we get done with those towards the end of May, we will package those with some sort of amended program description. OCRM has clarified in their letter that's what we have to do. Submit that in June, give them enough time. With that information, they will be able to offer preliminary approval. They have identified exactly what we have to do. We're in the process of doing it.
Representative Lodeau.
So this would have the effect of telling OCRM that if they didn't do, through the chair, if they didn't do what they're supposed to do by a certain date, then the state will lose the ability to expend federal money. Suppose they say tough.
Representative, I would assume that that's a question. Through the chair. Well, we have been negotiating with OCRM. We understand that coastal management in Alaska is as valuable to them as it is to the state. We have a mutual desire to get to an approvable point. and we're making all the steps, taking all the steps necessary to get there. As we understand it, they are.
And so, through the chair?
Yes.
And so, what would exactly happen if they didn't meet this this deadline and we no longer had the abilities to expend federal funds? Where would we go from there, or where would anybody go from there?
Representative, through the chair, the CS that's in front of you clarifies that if OCRM does not get to approval by January, I believe the way it's structured, and I think you could question or hear from the sponsor on it, but the sunset provisions or the repealer provisions within sections 1 through 14 take effect as of March 1st. Therefore, if OCRM has not finished their work, the state, with a voluntary coastal management program, has decided we're not going to continue this program. That's what this CS does.
However, and the very important provision on page 14, line 7, we will be back in session. So we've put a deadline to the feds, a very realistic deadline to the feds. And we said if you don't do this, there are going to be consequences. However, we've got till March 1st to rethink it. If we don't have a deadline, we will be here a year from now.
And
Representative Ledoux.
And I'm just trying to figure out what the consequences of this may be to the feds.
I would say we would tell them to get to work.
Representative Seaton. Chair, that would be certainly a question for the feds. We know what it means to us.
Representative Seaton.
Yes, I'm just trying to figure this out. January 1, 2006, Section 45 takes effect. Section 45 nullifies the bill, the statute. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, you're talking about the CS, and could you please point me to the correct
section? Page 13.
Okay, section 21.
Number 29, or okay. Line 29, section 49, where it says section 45, chapter 20.
That's, yes.
Four. So
I don't think there's going to be a problem with changing that to March 1st.
Okay, if there's not a problem changing that to March 1st, then my fear is that the next paragraph doesn't get us there because we've actually sunsetted the statute and we would have to re-implement the statute. So.
Yes. Representative Seaton, if we can move the amendment now, we can do it after the public testimony.
Okay. Can I just move that amendment so then we don't have to talk about it anymore?
Thank you. Yes, please do.
Thank you. Page 13, line 30, change January 1, 2006 to March 1, 2006.
Through objection to amendment number 1. Hearing none, amendment 1 carries. So we can end that.
Thank you.
End that concern quickly. Is there any other questions for Mr. Bates? We can go back to public testimony. Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
I have one. On page 12, section 19. I've read that 4 times and I still can't figure out what it means. Do you know what this is in there for and what it does? And can you explain to us what these changes and approvals and repeals of policies and where it says any matter regulated by DEC, is that limited to those things that require the issuance of a permit, certificate, approval, or other authorization, or is it just anything that has the potential for being regulated by DEC?
Representative Seaton, through the chair. Section 19, subsection A, this language was, I believe, put in the Senate Finance version, the CS of the Senate Finance version, as it was transmitted over. Is your question specific to the authority of DEC and what we're talking about under coastal management, or is it more general in what A and B do?
Yeah, first of all, it's more general. I mean, I'm trying to figure out exactly why it's here.
Okay.
And understand what the section, I mean, generally we don't put things in here for no reason at all. But it's popped in from the Senate side. And I don't know what it's there for, and then the specific question is on the regulation.
Okay. Representative Seat, through the chair, I'll certainly give you my version of what it does, representing the department here, but I think if you're interested in hearing why it was put in, you could talk with Mr. Baelish again or Senator Stevens, whoever was the sponsor. Subsection A of Section 19 deals specifically with a provision that says what it does is require any coastal district enforceable policy that is a restatement, duplication, or contrary provision existing state or federal law, that those become null and void. And the problem that we're going to run into in a very short period of time is when the new state standards go into effect, the date OCRM approves our coastal program, many of the coastal districts have incorporated by reference our current state standards or state or federal law that is already managed or implemented by a different agency. And what this provision, I believe, does is render those null and void as of the signing of this legislation, if it so moves that direction.
Would that be, excuse me?
Yes.
Would that be before the state standards are adopted? If this is, I mean, it seems like we're, if this is, repeals these things at this point in time before the this goes in effect, then we're going to have a big hole in things where you haven't got standards, we don't have the new plans, and my understanding was from 191 that the new plans can't have any of these things in them anyway. Yeah.
It is my understanding, this was from the Senate version, this is not just from the CS, that the transition here is hugely problematic. The new plans can't conflict with the state law, but right now we're currently still having conflicts.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, my problem is what I'm hearing is this null and void takes place as soon as this is signed. And do we have all those state standards in effect now?
It only affects the ones that you're in conflict with. Line 27. So if you're in conflict with the current regulation, or if you're duplicating the regulation, that the state standard now takes control. If there's the conflict,
the representative in the chair. The bottom line is, are the resources protected? And the answer is yes. The question becomes, the question that's out there right now is, if districts have duplicative laws, who has deference? Who gets control over those? The answer is the agency that has the authority has the responsibility to implement those laws. And it should not be a question of can the districts or district enforceable policies second guess how that agency does it. This cleans that situation up, and it's actually the way we've been implementing HB 191, is if there are laws out there, if a district has enforceable policies that restate a state law, districts don't get deference. The state law does. The state agency implementing that law does. This just makes very clear and emphatic that that's the case. Those policies are null and void.
And to follow up, so all of those state standards are in effect right now?
That's correct. Representative Seat, through the chair, that's correct. The state standards are, the 6AC80 state standards are still in effect. Districts have incorporated those by reference. They should not be maintained in those district enforceable policies, nor should the provisions of DEC, since in HB 191, DEC was carved out. The issuance of their permit constitutes consistency with the ACMP.
And just one more follow-up. Sorry, this is confusing me here in the last. So this will not require the districts the local districts to do any rewrites or anything in their enforceable policies, their current enforceable policies. They're already required not to have these things in their future enforceable policies that are going to be approved, because you wouldn't approve any of those things. But I'm just trying to, I want to make sure that we maintain the direction and the focus and the money and the efforts of the districts doing the new plans, and make sure that we don't have to have them go back and revise anything in the old plans, which are going to sunset in, you know, 6 months. Mm-hmm. Is that correct, that they will not have to take any action based on this? Is that correct?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that is correct. This is an implementation issue on project review, unrelated to the planning revisions that they're undergoing right now. That's okay. Your question is correct.
And there was just the one specific question that I had about any matter regulated by the department, and is that the same as any matter that requires the issuance of a permit, certification, approval, or other authorization?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that's probably a legal question. It would be reckless for me to render a legal opinion on that. I'd probably defer that to an opinion or other drafters of the bill. I would recognize that districts are unable to draft enforceable policies related to those areas where DEC regulates anyway under the coastal program. So though the question may be technical in nature, it's rendered moot by the fact that they can't write policies regarding air or water quality issues that DEC has permit authority over.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. What if we reach that moment when we can no longer expend federal money? What action takes place right then? Do you terminate employees? Do you reassign them? I'm not sure what the effect is at that moment.
Representative Gatto, through the chair. This is a question we similarly have asked. Again, this is a legal issue that I'm not so educated to brief you on. But in general, the state standards sunset on January 1st. Without state standards, which are the state's rules for project compliance, we are unable to implement coastal management, the consistency review process. When we're unable to implement that, we have run afoul of our own coastal program that says we do so.
And I guess I'm asking back to the question of what really, you're no longer able to do that. I understand that, but what happens to employees that are currently involved in that activity?
Representative Gatto, again through the chair. There are two additional time frames as part of this provision that are within the CS that give the authority to the legislature to get back into coastal management, even if the standards have gone off the books. So I assume it's a little bit premature to decide what happens to our employees, given that the legislative body can come back in and restructure the coastal program if they so chose.
Yes.
But we're not back yet. I mean, this happens on January 1.
Not anymore.
But the amendment is delayed.
Yes. Any other questions for Randy right now? Go back to public testimony then. In Dillingham, Andrew DeValpine. Are you with us, Andrew?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay. State your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Yeah, Andrew DeValpin. I'm the director of the Bristol Bay Coastal Resource Service Area. We're based in Dillingham, and our area encompasses a region about this, quite a bit larger than Vermont, actually. We go out west towards Togiak and east to the Lake and Peninsula Borough and north up to Kaliganik, Nooshigak River area. First of all, I wanted to thank you for working on these bills and getting them through. Hope they make it. We definitely favor the extension, up to March. That would be favorable. It seems like the more elastic it is, the more realistic it is. So we do support the extension to March, although we can live with what the administration recommended, which is to December, but I know that's not in this bill, so March is better for us. And I think we'd be less likely to run into some of the problems we've run into already in terms of unrealistic deadlines that have put us into this position at this point. So we favor that. The sunset provision seems gratuitous to us in that, and I'm glad Randy's there because he can correct me if I'm wrong on this or affirm, but I do believe in the original bill there's a provision for reviewing this program periodically and on a regular basis. And then regarding Section 19 Bravo, the ABC list, I think from our perspective that would be best left out for now. I think, if I remember right, HB 191 does mention the ABC list, and I know within the department it is on their radar to revise, but I think sticking it into this bill with this timeline will confound things and just mix things up a bit further. So we would prefer that that not be part of it. And I think that's all I had. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Andrew? Thank you very much. We'll go now to the Lake and Peninsula Borough. Marv Smith, are you with us, Marv?
Yes, sir. Marv Smith here, Lake and Peninsula Borough.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it very much. The Lake and Peninsula Borough has been following this from a long time. This bill, we support the Senate bill that originally came out of the Senate that went out yesterday. All these new additional amendments are confusing and often contradictory and very controversial. We support Section 16, which gives the March 1, 2007 extension. We support Section 17, which gives the March 1, 2006 extension, and also in Section 21, which you just changed at an amendment this meeting. We do not support Section 19A on the DEC carve out, taking everything out of our present regulations for that time period, because it would be very, very confusing for districts to understand what DEC policies apply in our present policies until we get them rewritten. I realize that's only a short time period, but it would just make additional work for probably the DNR staff to help us identify those. They are bogged down already. Section 19B, we totally oppose, and that's the new one that's added today, requiring that the ABC list be done immediately. DNR is going to be very busy, and so are we, trying to get our plans revised and working back and forth in the next 6 months or whatever time period we're given to get it done. And for them to be compounded and us also to look at the ABC list would be very time-consuming for us and not to take appropriate time to get it done. I think as previous testimony from Andrew DeValpine stated that the original bill in House Bill 191 stated they were going to redo those, and I think we should. I think we should, the ABC list does need to be done, but this is not the appropriate time to do it, and I think that needs to be removed from the bill. The Lake and Peninsula Borough certainly does not support the deadline, or provision of 2011 that we had to come back and review this thing. Again, House Bill 191 said we had to review our plans in 10 years. I support that. I think that's a good time frame. We've got a lot of work to do. We've done a lot of work. Everybody is working very diligently to try to get our plans done. Our borough is leaning forward, and we got our plans pretty much, but last week when we got all our comments back from the state, it's very obvious I have got a lot more work to do, and we really need the extensions. And at the end of it, I'd like to just ask if you could ask DNR, if through the chair, please, to go back, and if they support the original bill that came out of the Senate, yesterday, before all these additional extensions were put on this, because that's the bill that I think that would probably be beneficial to most of the districts, even though there are some things in there that we would rather not live with, but we would rather live with that version. With all due respect, I request that, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any questions for Mr. Smith? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to Theed Tobish from the municipality of Anchorage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Theed Tobish. I'm a coastal district coordinator and senior environmental planner for the municipality of Anchorage. Appreciate your efforts, yours and the committee's efforts very much at addressing this issue, especially the time extension. As I've said many times, unfortunately, Anchorage is very excited to redo our plan. We've been excited for about 10 years, and this is perfect for us. The time extension to March is perfect as well. We had been on record as requesting at least 6 months, so that provision is great in our mind. We are concerned with some of the complications that have been added with some of the recent amendments, specifically the Section 22 provision to sunset the program. Seems extraneous, seems additional undue pressure. There's already provision to revise and review plans, and we're concerned that that would bring on additional staff and funding expenditures just to simply address it. We don't support Provision 19B with the ABC list. We're not quite sure how we could revise such a list before our plan is completed and before the state regulations are accepted, which would be the case with this year provision. There's too much time competition and possible conflict with some of the new language. Finally, simply, we urge you to carefully consider any last-minute amendments, especially those that might reflect, that may not reflect what should be a broader dialogue with the districts and Alaska-affected communities, and hopefully keep it simple. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Tobish? Seeing none, we'll go on to Tom Lohman with the North Slope Borough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Lohman. I represent the North Slope Borough. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to be heard today. I'll join with my fellow district representatives and support the extension provisions of this bill. We strongly oppose all of the other extraneous provisions that have been introduced. I think it was Marlene who said we have to deal with all these changes and it takes time away from our work on the revisions that we're tasked with completing. Specifically, we oppose the sunset provision. It and the entire amendment process is premised on what I think is an outright falsehood that in some way the districts have abused their authority under the program. No one has ever come forward with examples of good projects that have been rejected or significantly delayed by an ACMP consistency review. I believe an attempt was made 6 or 7 years ago to do away with the ACMP, and as ammunition there was a list of purportedly delayed projects that was offered. And upon staff investigation, it was shown that none of the claims were valid. Every project was held up as well by one or more state or federal permits. They simply were not good projects as proposed, and no district has been shown to abuse its power under the program. The more than 250 communities we represent, you know, we don't need the threat of non-reauthorization to do our jobs. We oppose the ABC list review timeline. I think it's been mentioned by other districts that DNR is already short-staffed. They're losing three of their project review people here. I think today may be the last day for one or more of them. And they face a substantial challenge reviewing the 27 revised district plans that are going to be submitted and conducting the day-to-day work under the program. As Steed said, reviewing the list is difficult and problematical while we're working on our programs and trying to get those reviewed. Specifically, some of the individual activities that are included in the provision requiring review of the ABC list, of course, are North Slope oil and gas industry activities. My guess is this proposal came from AOGA or one of the other industry groups. If you take a quick look at it, there are some significant definitional problems with some of those. Again, I think it's been said that moving quickly on something like this that really requires a more in-depth dialogue with the districts is a bit risky. We're dealing with a number of projects on the slope right now, and terms like adjacent to are rife with controversy and problems. So I'd be very hesitant to put those kind of provisions in a bill when you haven't hashed out exactly what they mean. Finally, we oppose Section 22. I think it's unreasonable to risk losing the entire state program if OCRM cannot complete the EIS process within, what are we talking about now, 7 or 8 months, the risk of losing the program is the risk of losing the ability to exert control over federal actions and federally permitted activities. If you want to talk about a state's rights issue, that's the state's rights issue, not the way it's been characterized by the administration. There's no other program where the federal government yields to the state control, some measure of control over its own projects and permitted activities. And for us to lose that would be a huge loss to Alaska and the 250 communities that the coastal program covers. Again, I think there have been some significant misrepresentations on a couple of key points. The reason we are at this point at this late hour is not solely the fault of OCRM. It's very easy to point a finger at the federal government when their reps are not in the room. But DNR as well has to acknowledge that they repeatedly gave conflicting interpretations of its proposed regulations and unclear guidance regarding districts' ability to craft enforceable policies. And you know, up until even January, February of this year, on very significant issues for the North Slope Borough, we were not clear. We did not get clear guidance from DNR as to what we could do in terms of our enforceable policies. There's been allegations of district foot-dragging and working on the required plan revisions. That is absolutely untrue, and I believe through the Coastal District Association, we've sent a letter with a timeline that we sent to all legislators that showed, you know, exactly the pressures and challenges we've been faced with trying to get our plans started and completed in the timelines allowed. We don't like the direction the state has taken this program, of course. It reduces any meaningful role in many areas and in development in a lot of areas of the state, but as other district reps have said, we have worked diligently and will continue to do so. And these extraneous measures that keep getting introduced several times a day, it seems, in the last couple of days, take our time away from doing those revisions. And a clean bill that gets the extensions approved, as the governor has now supported, is really where we should be focusing our attention to protect this very valuable program. And with that, I'll conclude my comments. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Lohman. Are there any questions for Mr. Lohman? Seeing none, we'll move on to John Oscar. Are you with us, John?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the honorable committee members. God bless you in your work, and it may provide good judgment. For the record, I am John Oscar, Program Director for Snally Lake Coastal Resource Service Area. I have 38 Yupik villages, and we have the largest number of remote villages in Alaska. This is an open plea to the legislature, and I concur with the previous district presenters a while ago. I participated with the legislative process relating to this issue. I have seen developments that should be cause for concern relating to the latest developments on Senate Bill 102 before you. I am gravely concerned with what is happening. This is not a malcontent. The leadership passed House Bill 191 back in 2003. It removed three main points. One, habitat standards. Two, land, air, and water quality standards. And three, all reference to mining. We have been dissected and dissected, looking for an illness that is not there, but causing more problems to an otherwise healthy body. I am in a deep hole that gives me no room to adequately address this issue to my people correctly. The regulations that we saw came out in February this year. How much guidance do we have from that point on? Now, Section 19 will declare null and void immediately any policy language it deems and seemingly sees as addressing the statewide standards. It leaves no room to breathe. We are already under the gun. For example, with reference to subsistence, DNR says that a district may only write a policy that, quote, allows or disallows, unquote, a use that affects subsistence. Further, policies must flow from the statewide subsistence standard, which is 11 AAC 112-270. In comments on a draft coastal district plan, DNR recently determined that none of the three subsistence policies would be allowed because they do not flow from the statewide standards. the policies would become null and void as of January 1, 2006. This is catch-22. You basically cannot submit any policy relating to subsistence resource protection under this guidance. If a district were to submit subsistence enforceable policies today, DNR's interpretations would reject policies. And these are some of the words I've seen. Due to the avoid minimize sequence in the subsistence standard, the maintenance of subsistence use area is adequately addressed under the state standard, and therefore the policy is not allowed. Another one. Access does not flow from 11 AAC 112-270. Therefore, this policy is not approvable. Thirdly, there's another one. Level of need does not flow from 11 AAC 112-270. Therefore, the policy is not allowed. If our program policies are not in compliance, we are basically gone null and void. Concerns on Section 20. It's an additional supremacy to declare emergency regulations, giving it more power to dictate itself against the people of Alaska with no idea of what those emergency regulations would be. Section 22, 2011, reference to the Sunset Clause, I'm concerned about that. As the other coastal district folks had said, that we do support the deadlines, the extension of deadlines, but oppose this January 1st, 2006 deadline if our policies are not in compliance. We have been given no time. We have not been given appropriate measures to be able to address our concerns adequately. My experience with these latest developments has been confusing, much more complex, and injecting new issues to ultimately remove the ICMP, the public, the districts, and local rights from the state of Alaska's process to understand the concerns from the people when permits are being applied for. With that, I basically have nothing else to say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Ms. Grosker, for taking the time with us today. Is there any questions for John Oscar? Thank you very much. Morris Masick from Koyuk.
Yes, Chairman Armas and Samuel and members of the Resource Committee. My name is Morris Nesuk and I represent Bering Strait Coastal Resource Service Area, Coastal District. Thank you for this opportunity to testify on HB 189. The Bering Strait Coastal District supports the provisions in the House State Affairs that would tie the extension of the deadline for submitting the revised coastal management plans to the final approval of the ACMP changes by the Federal Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management. This is necessary because we will not know the final requirements for coastal district policies until after OCRM gives final approval for the changes. The Bering Strait Coastal District opposes the provision in the bill that would sunset the program in 2011. This program has worked well for Alaska for over 25 years, and we feel there's no need to sunset the program. And I thank you again for the opportunity to testify on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Masick. Is there any questions? Okay, thank you much. Back in the audience here to Judy Brady.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the purposes of the record, my name is Judy Brady. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Right up till about 2 weeks ago, AOGA was opposing extensions that the coastal districts had been asking for, not because we believe the coastal districts were not trying to do their job. In fact, we thought they were doing an excellent job. But because we believed that extensions would encourage OCRM, the federal agency, involved to continue to drag its feet and to continue to try to dictate to Alaska what kind of program we would have. We are now, Governor Murkowski sent the letter and said this is going to be a state program. We are encouraged by that. We are now supporting with some concern the extensions that the governor has requested and that this bill allows. We would be objecting to any extensions linked to the action by the federal agency. In other words, an extension that said we will give you 6 months from the time OCRM takes final action. That kind of extension, because again, it puts the ball in the federal court. But when you look at a map of Alaska that we all have in our minds, we have a lot of federal land in this state. And the rest of it is state land, Native corporation land. And all around our coastal area is a lot of state land. And all our activity takes place in the state. ACMP was intended to be a state program. The federal government has been coming here every 3 or 4 years to see how we are doing, see how their program is doing. It's not their program. It's Alaska's program, and some of the coastal districts have spoken to that. I think if you're going to give extensions, then you need what's going to happen at the end if OCRM does not do its part. And so we would support an end date that the program would go away unless the legislature takes other action if they don't do their part. We believe that OCRM will not and cannot let the Alaska ACMP program go away. We believe that the Alaska ACMP program is one of the stars in OCRM, in the federal agency's coastal management program. And it would be a huge black eye for them, huge, with huge political repercussions for them through feet dragging or whatever else there is they're doing. And those of you who have read their responses to the state, you can't hardly get through a paragraph without saying, what? What? The tones are condescending. The tone is a kind of in your face. And if you have not read any of the letters from OCRM to the state, it might be worth your while to pick one of those up. Right until Governor Murkowski wrote the letter saying this is going to be a state program, it is a state program, the tone changed almost immediately. So we spent a lot of time, just like there were some questions here about what happens if this program went away. That has huge implications for the oil and gas industry as well. So we spent some time taking a look at what might happen for us and how long it would take. A program doesn't go away immediately. There's all kinds of steps that have to be taken. So the January date is, in our view, and I just saw this change, but some end date. And HB 191 had an end date as well, if you will recall. You're just extending that end date, as a matter of fact. We'll keep OCRM on deadline. That's the only thing that will keep them on deadline. If you say, we're going to give you a deadline, but nothing's going to happen if you don't meet it, they will never meet it. It will just go on and on. And for those of us communities who are trying to do things, and the oil and gas industry who are trying to have activities, we're going through a long period now from 2003 when HB 191 passed till now, all through 2006 to the beginning of 2007, in kind of a no man's land with existing enforceable policies and new ones in some places and new state standards. And Randy Bates and Bill Jeffress and their team are working very diligently so things don't get totally bollocked up and stopped. But there is the danger, and there is especially the danger of third-party suits. That's what has happened with ACMP, not so much from the coastal districts, but from third-party suits. That has made ACMP kind of a nightmare, plus just the time it takes because it's a program that overlays municipal programs and some state programs. HB 191 has cleared that up a lot. We hope that you keep, now that we see it's in there, we hope you keep a final date in there, especially when you've given yourself the leeway to do something about it if it doesn't come to be. But unless you keep OCRM's feet to the fire, they are going to continue to believe, as the person that we met with from OCRM said, well, this is more of a federal program than a state program. And your legislature doesn't understand. Well, I think our legislature does understand. On the, let's see, what are some of the other things in here? On the ABC list, there's been some discussion on that. We have been asking for a review of the ABC list for almost 10 years, and before there was internal gridlock among agencies. The ABC list is, the A list are simple things that you do all the time that don't require a consistency review. A lot of it has nothing to do with oil and gas. Oil and gas is not the only activity affected by consistency. The B list are more complicated things that you do, but you've done them so much, and they have all kinds of stipulations. If you do them that same way, then they're deemed consistent.
And do you have an example of something that's on the B list?
An ice road
is on the B list? Okay.
Yes, and an ice road didn't get on the B list until, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, although we'd done hundreds of them. What happens on the B list is that the department sends out a description of the activity and the stipulations. The public, including the coastal districts, comment on, are these enough stipulations? You know, is this the right way to do it? Then every time you do that activity, if you've done it the way it's laid out in the stipulations, then you're deemed consistent. You do not have to go through a consistency review. If you change the way you do it, then you have to go through a consistency review. There's only about 50 items on the B list. What we were looking for was to extend for the department to take a look at the B list and update it. Whether or not you have a list in there of what they need to look at is, these are some things we're interested in looking at whenever they get around to looking at them. Whether you want to have a list in your statute or not is up to you, for them to take a look at. We would be asking them to take a look at this sort of thing. The timing on it, we asked for 1 year from the time the state standards were done. Randy Bates and I have been talking about that, and I hear some of the coastal districts talking about that may cause a backup issue. We would like a time certain, just because if there's not a time certain in which this happens, it tends never to happen. Whether it's 1 year or 2 years is something that people can discuss. We don't want it to be an impossible situation, but we do believe it's time for a time certain. It's just gone on. It's gone on too long. I don't know. We very much believe that HB 191 made some important changes in the coastal program, and I guess everybody describes the elephant differently. We never saw that the changes took away from the coastal districts. The big changes were that the coastal district enforceable policies could not duplicate state or federal law. They were never intended to do that in the first place. Now when they make an enforceable policy that's specific to their area and that is not covered by federal or state law, that's what it should be. It should be something so special and so that it's not covered. Although, frankly, through the last 30 years, the state and the federal government have passed so many environmental laws trying to protect the coastal resources that there's probably, we expected there wouldn't be very many enforceable policies. We expected that there would be just a few enforceable policies, things that coastal districts knew instantly were not covered and wanted to cover. So apparently that expectation was different on our part than on the coastal district's part. The coastal districts under HB 191 are given the same power as the legislature. When they have an enforceable policy or set up a special area, which normally has to go through legislative action, it has the same effect as if the legislature had acted on it. So under HB 191, our view has always been that the coastal districts have been given in some very real sense the same power as the legislature on state land and for activities on federal land that require a federal permit. And those of you who are familiar with the North Slope know that every activity up there requires a federal permit because of wetlands. So the powers of the coastal districts are, in fact, very extensive. And it just happens that the two districts most important to us because of past work, the North Slope Borough, the Kenai Borough, also have Title 29. And up till now, the North Slope Boroughs, for instance, Title 29 has been exactly the same as its coastal district regulations. So there's a whole lot of interesting things going on right now about coastal district and Title 29 issues and comprehensive plans. We're just looking for a way that if you're going to extend this, and as I say, we're not objecting to that right now, having concerns, that this no man's land doesn't extend on and on and on, which leaves us at so much risk for third-party suits and for changes of administration that will mean changes in how things are interpreted, or changes at the local level, which means changes in how things are interpreted. So for permitting purposes, we like as much certainty as we can get, and we believe that this particular bill does not require the coastal districts to do anything more but give them more time.
Okay.
So we would support this, these amendments.
Thank you. Ms. Brady, any questions for Judy? Representative Seaton.
I guess I did. I was trying to figure out why you would be opposing the districts having their enforceable, their rewrites tied to the approval of this by OCRM of the state standards. It seems to me that it'd be like one of your companies going in and putting in a bid on a lease and not knowing what the lease conditions are going to be. And until you get the publication of the RFP, the notice of lease, it's really hard for you to make a proposal on a bid. And that's the position we put them in, is they don't have the proposal for the bid. They don't have the notice of what they're supposed to do. They have some guidelines, and they have, well, this is probably what it is. And now they're supposed to write out their plans. And so I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, I don't have any problems with the part where the state and the state regulations are, you know, tied there. But I'm just trying to figure out why we are trying to make the local coastal policies do their rewrite of plans when we don't have final approval of what the standards are going to be.
To the chair, we are assuming that the state that OCRM is going to pretty much approve the state standards as they have been proposed. They have done that for every other state when there's been a change, and for them to do. And they've indicated, especially in this last round of correspondence, that they will, in fact, approve them pretty much the way they are now. So in our minds, the state standards are, unless OCRM is just flat line, are going to be approved as presented. Once, I think there was four areas of change that that we're in the middle of getting public comment on right now.
Yeah, I guess you have more confidence in the feds than I do.
Yeah, through the chair, I have absolutely no confidence.
I wouldn't characterize it as that. Are there any other questions for Judy? Okay, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today. Continuing on public testimony in the Matsu G. Woods.
Good afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to voice my opinion on this issue. My name is Jean Woods, and I have before me a copy of the Matsu Borough's draft plan for this. There has been no public input yet, and I would ask for an extension of the deadline, and I would like to read just two sentences from Chapter 6, Enforceable Policies. There is no state standard for recreation or tourism. It is also important to note that the state standard for coastal development and coastal access are limited to marine coastal water, therefore, neither is applicable to rivers, lakes, and streams. At the Tuesday assembly meeting, the administration tried to designate our coastal zone tourism and recreation on the consent agenda with no input from the public. Therefore, I respectfully request the moving of the deadline so that we have an opportunity for public input. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Woods. Are there any questions? And Noel Woods? And Matt Sue also?
Thank you. My name is Noel Woods, and I've listened to all of your discussion on this, and I really appreciate the effort going in to bring local coastal zone management plans in line with the statewide public expectations and representing several outdoor use activities. And the Matanuska Valley sportsmen were very much interested in public use of public lands. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you much, Mr. Woods. Are there any questions for Mr. Woods? Is there anybody else online that we've missed that wanted to testify on SB 102? Is there anybody else in the audience wanted to testify on SB 102? Mr. Balash.
Mr. Chairman, forgive me. Earlier I failed to speak on behalf of my boss, the chair of the Budget and Audit Committee, on why it is he pushed for the sunset date in 2011 with the audit provisions put in there. Over the last 8 years, he's gotten to know the Coastal Zone program through his work on the DNR and DEC budgets when he was in this body, and then on through the years sort of became known as the one person who knew what this big machine was that was coastal zone management and the consistency review process. The characterizations of the program depended very much on the point of view and perspective of the individual you were speaking with, whether it was somebody in a coastal district, somebody in industry, or somebody in the bureaucracy. And it's very difficult to sort through all of that information, keeping in mind the context of who that person is, what viewpoint they have, and where they're coming from. So by putting in place a sunset with an audit, there are three primary benefits. You get a thorough review of the program, how it works, how it doesn't. It's an objective look. It's coming from our third, or in this case, fourth party division of ledge audit. And three, you get quantifiable, measurable data to back up any characterizations or conclusions you come to. And with that sort of information, the legislature would be best equipped at that point to make meaningful decisions on whether or not the program is working, whether there are things that need fixing, and specifically how to fix them, instead of having to sort of grab from a hat. And so for those reasons, Senator Terrio insisted on the sunset and audit provisions that came in Senate Finance. He also worked with the senator from the North Slope area and Northwest Arctic area on creating a gap in the timeline between federal approval and the deadline for submission of the revised plans. It was a two-month gap so that the districts would know with some finality what the rules are, what the standards are, so that they could make whatever adjustments they needed to in their revised plans before submitting them to the state for what is a year-long review and approval process that involves both the state and federal agency. And if I may also speak to Section 19, Part A, the provision in AS 4640.030B, which says that a local coastal district may not, and as amended here, shall not adopt by reference any statute or regulation of the state or another federal agency. There was a bill that passed that he sponsored in 2002. It was Senate Bill 308. Local districts were given specific direction to remove those references. They did not. If they did not, the Coastal Policy Council was given direction to remove those provisions. The Coastal Policy Council did not. When House Bill 191 passed in 2003, the commissioner at DNR was given the same powers as the Coastal Policy Council had previously and was to delete those provisions, those adoptions by reference. DNR has not done that. And so it would be fair to say that in some ways my boss is seeking to make a point that the legislature has spoken twice on this matter. It needs to be done. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions in light of the testimony.
Any further questions? Is there anybody else in the audience wishing to testify? With that, we'll recess the meeting to the call of the chair.